As usual, I naturally had a week with various experiences. And in that week of experiences, I found there were many interesting points for me to discuss. Part of these understandings, or shall we say realizations that come during my weekly experiencing, had to do a lot with people, about what people are, how people are with each other, our various needs as people. And naturally, I have found different relationships to be rather deep, other relationships to be rather shallow. Sometimes the relationships go so deep that they transcend time, they transcend lifetimes, they transcend even our belief. Last week we talked about that evolution may not exist in the form that we think it does. And what I found interesting is that many of you out there agreed with me wholeheartedly. I received confirmation from many of you where this discussion of the possibility of evolution being something other than we have understood it throughout our whole lives was a relevant point to you. And I think that's an important feedback for me, because last week I felt that perhaps I was on shaky grounds speaking about this point. After all, the main focus of discussion amongst most aware people today is our evolution. And if I come out and make such a statement or implication that perhaps there really isn't any evolution in the sense we have thought about it, that's very radical. Now, as you know, I don't mind being radical. It's something that fascinates me. But this idea of me being radical only makes sense when that which I'm being radical about expands our consciousness, expands our awareness. After all, it's not that I enjoy being radical just because it's different than other people. I don't like to just do things differently. That's not what I'm talking about. Being different for the sake of being different doesn't give me pleasure. Quite the contrary, I like to show similarities between people. I like to show similarities between ideas. I like to make a kind of unification of ideas, a unification of people. So being radical in the sense of just being opposite or coming up with something totally different than what anyone expects is contrary to that basic belief I have. But even so, if there is some point which I feel would be very interesting for all of us to consider, if there's a point which would be useful for us in our lives, I don't at all mind speaking about it, even if it is completely radical. Now, when you speak about evolution, basically what we mean is we grow, we develop, we become something more than what we were before. Now, that is a good idea. The idea of growth, the idea of expansion, this is organic, this is natural. Any organism, whatever it may be, that's living, experiences growth. It's one of the symptoms of life. When there's no longer any growth of any kind, there's not a symptom of life. This means that, basically speaking, our life is intimately linked with our growth. And this intimate connection between our growth and ourselves is that which is what we call evolution. It would be a mistake to consider that one's evolution was somehow linked to one's learning or one's abilities or one's capacities. For these things are not what I am. These are things that I acquire or I acquire through my body. And these kinds of acquisitions, are not acquisitions which are directly impacting my evolution as a growing spiritual energy. They are things, just like, for example, I may acquire paintings in my house, I may acquire CDs, I may acquire so many things. These are things I acquire, they're acquisitions. Now, obviously, the soul has no acquisitions because the material kind of a thing which we could acquire is not in the same dimension as the spirit. Yet, at the same time, we can understand that our growth is a growth of the organic, energetic body. This growth is not a growth of things on the body. It is a growth of the body itself. In other words, it is a growth of energy. It is a growth of awareness. It is a growth of connection to those things which have a very deep meaning to us. And here's a point which is often misunderstood. It is a growth of power. Now, if you look in a regular physical body, a little baby doesn't have what you would naturally call physical power. But a little baby is very cute. A little baby is very helpless. A little baby has that energy to absorb our consciousness. And that is enormous power. In other words, in that condition of physical limitation, because babies are physically limited, it is just their energy of pure beauty that grabs us. Now, as one grows physically, that original energetic attraction diminishes proportionately to the way in which the physical existence and the mental and emotional existence grow. So that original energy is gradually replaced by this other form of physical development, or that which is related to the physical development. And then that strength which we see manifesting has more obvious forms of power. In other words, the power manifested by that body becomes more obvious. The power to speak desires, the power to kick the ball, the power to make money, the power to pass tests. These forms of power cause the personality to be respected, or if there's a lack of it, to not be respected. Originally, there was no question of respect. It was a question of simply being absorbed in the beauty, appreciating the person. Appreciating the person is, of course, a very good thing. That appreciation, which was originally there for the baby, gradually diminishes and transforms as the baby grows. Whereas that power transforms along with the appreciation. In other words, let's put it this way. The spiritual connection transforms inversely in the way in which the materialistic forms of power manifest. Now, that is not a universal principle all the time. There are people who manifest great spiritual power as they grow older, and the appreciation for their spiritual power increases as well. But when we look at other people, generally, we appreciate the fact that they're rich and they help us. We appreciate the fact that they're learned, they help us. We appreciate the fact that they support us in some way or another. We see that they have something to offer us, they have some power to offer us, and we appreciate it. So power is something we find significant. We find that kind of power, either due to opulence or beauty in the sense of a model or something or whatever, or riches or whatever. It is significant. So power as a category is a very significant thing to us. Now let's go back to that growth that we're talking about with evolution. As the spirit grows, it also grows in power. It also grows in capacity. It is not related to acquisitions. It is not related to objects, but it is related to the energy of the person. So when we see evolution on the spiritual level, we're actually seeing organic spiritual growth of power, of strength, of the capacity to meaningfully impact others. For example, we would find those who have such capacities, have such very great spiritual capacities, also know the art of walking in a room and affecting everybody simply by their enormous capacity of energy. They have such an enormous capacity that they can simply enter into a space and everybody is affected by it in one way or another. Now, I'm not saying that this is necessarily, we are able to perceive this necessarily on the visible level, but it's a feeling. It's the way the energy impacts us directly. Because your eyes or your external ways of perceiving power and influence can fool you. Now, I think it's very significant. I think it's extremely significant that there are spiritual energies, spiritual powers which influence us in a way which we cannot perceive on that level. For these forms of energy, these forms of spiritual power are what really impact us when it comes down to the fundamental level. Now, when we talk about growth, we're talking about the growth of the energy, the body of energy. That means the power. That means the way in which that spiritual energy expands, the way in which the consciousness can cut through anything. That can evolve in the sense of grow, because spirit must grow. Growth and evolution, if we use that in the same sense, that is the way in which we evolve. I'm very sorry, people out there. You know, sometimes what I say gets a little spaced out, and that's because I'm being barraged by instant messages saying, I can't connect, help, and it doesn't work in the computer. And I'm trying to fix it while I'm trying to talk. Someday you should try doing that. That's a real interesting experience. One part of your brain is moving towards a philosophical point. The other part is moving towards a technological point. It like rips you apart inside. What I was attempting to say, which came out terribly, and you don't have to feel bad about thinking how spaced out that discussion was, because it really was. What I've been trying to show is that really evolution boils down to the growth of power, the growth of capacity, the growth of the spirit to be able to impact other spirit. Now, when we go out and we engage in experiential activity, when we experience, when we do different things, what we are really doing is flexing our energetic muscles and growing. When you're aware of that, anything you do, wherever it may be, can be part of your spiritual evolutionary growth. Now, I was about to start explaining about various traditions like Indian or Chinese even or whatever. These traditions have a basis in discipline and austerity. Now, these disciplines and austerities that people take up were done with the consciousness of expanding the energetic spiritual muscles to develop power. Seen in that context, it makes perfect sense. The problem, if you want to call it a problem, I would say the way that had the original intention became deviated is when disciplines and austerities did not connect to growth of power, expansion of spiritual energy. Now, what is interesting is that when people were following or are following different spiritual leaders, the thing about them that attracts them is the power. Yet the direct connection between the austerity or the discipline or whatever and the power is not seen linearly. It is by the way. For example, in those disciplines we are very familiar with, you develop love, you develop your devotion for God, and tangentially you will develop your growth of power. And yet there were so many other things along the way, because the direct connection between that spiritual evolution and growth and the power that comes with it was not firmly established. It's a little bit fuzzy and it needs to be very sharply focused. And that is that the idea of doing service, being a servant, engaged in these activities with discipline and austerity was not focused in the growth of the spiritual power. Now, I don't mean to say in any way that that makes it meaningless. It makes such endeavors meaningless. But rather, some people may even think that this idea of power, this idea of the spiritual expansion like that, means that one wishes to have some kind of power over others, or some power to exploit, or some power to quote-unquote enjoy, and therefore it's bad. And because of such possibilities, because the potential for misuse like that is there, sometimes people get the idea that they should neglect such power. They should try to make themselves powerless, to make themselves smaller, to make themselves humbler, to reduce what they are in the hope of being more spiritual. There's a big difference between being so aware that you know what you are, and therefore all of this false manifestation of pride or the desire to exploit could never manifest, and trying to be like that. This kind of humility, if we may use this word, is rather an expression of power than a cause of it. Now, naturally, you don't want to start expressing all kinds of false manifestations of pride and a glorification of yourself. That's not what I'm talking about. The intention of what I'm saying is that power is not bad. Power is actually the direct result of the expansion or growth of the soul. So those who perform those systems of austerity, penance, and so on in the former times, in the former forms of disciplines, were doing it with the full knowledge that their power was directly connected with their spiritual growth. In other words, the growth and the power are inseparable. So disciplines and austerities done with the cultivation of the growth, done with the idea to cultivate the growth, the expansion of our spiritual power, is much more effective. I'll give you an example, okay? And this example is very relevant. If you have a tulsi plant, everybody knows tulsi plants, very holy plant. And if you take care of tulsi, there are two different ways you can do it. Now, you can think tulsi is just purely spiritual, and all you have to do is offer some water and pray to tulsi and circumambulate tulsi and love tulsi and put tulsi leaves on the altar, and everything will be fine. So you are cultivating Tulsi, and you are cultivating that love, you are cultivating that kind of energy, that devotion, but it is an incomplete form of cultivation. You are seeing the discipline of it. You are understanding it just as what you are getting out of it and how you interact with it for something that you have been told you will get. And yet there's another way to do it, to see Tulsi as a plant. And as a plant, there are certain things Tulsi needs as a plant to grow. So when you see Tulsi in that way, and you think about Tulsi's growth in that way, connected with Tulsi as a plant, yet connected with the spiritual energy as well, you nourish her in a different way. Because you are aware of the entirety, the holistic point of view, the holistic picture of Tulsi. So you place Tulsi in the sun for the amount of time Tulsi should be in the sun. You make sure that Tulsi gets not too much water, just enough. You change the earth and repot Tulsi when the roots have grown to the limits of the pot. You make sure that there's enough fertilizer. And you also breathe on Tulsi, believe it or not. Plants love carbon, the carbon dioxide that comes from our lungs. That's what they convert to oxygen. And if you think, oh my God, breathe on Tulsi, what an offense. That's kind of funny, because that's exactly what she loves. So you feed Tulsi what she needs, and at the same time you feed her energetically. So Tulsi becomes more powerful. You become more powerful. Now, that example, of course, has many enters us into many other fields of devotion. But I just wanted to make this point about being aware of power, being aware of cultivation, of nourishment. If you just take care of a plant because somebody told you to do so, and you have no idea about what it means to cultivate a plant, you get a different result than when you are very aware of what the plant needs and what your goal is for its growth and expansion. Some gardeners get no good effect in their plant. Their plants die, or they don't grow, or they're horrible. And other gardeners get fantastic gardens. What's the difference? I think it's important. I think it's extremely important that we understand that the more aware we are, the more aware we are of the development of the power, of the development of what we are, the better the result will be. And when we are very aware and very sure of how we are moving and how we are developing in our spiritual growth, that growth will be more focused. That growth will be much more powerful, quicker. It's not like a formula. Okay, every 3 months you throw this much fertilizer in a plant. You have to look, and when the plant shows signs of needing something, you give it according to the need. Now, that is a conscious evolution, as opposed to one that happens by the way. So when I was speaking about evolution, and the fact that it didn't exist in the way in which we thought it existed, what I'm really speaking about is conscious evolution, where you consciously expand your spiritual energy. You consciously grow your spiritual field. You reach out consciously. In this way, you are pushing the limits of your capacity and developing your spiritual muscle. So here's where knowledge comes in. Now, knowledge is a very interesting thing. It is a very interesting kind of a concept that can be discussed in a whole variety of ways. Knowledge could be seen as something dogmatic. In other words, it's rote. I'm teaching it, you're learning it. Knowledge can also be seen as something which grows from our experience, how to do something. Knowledge can also be a means by which people acquire something which they think is going to expand what they are. I'm talking here specifically in terms of somebody who uses knowledge as a means to expand their position or to expand their power over others as being better, more knowledgeable, to gain respect. Now, that kind of knowledge has its place. That kind of knowledge has its usefulness. But in this system of evolution, the usefulness may be quite different than what one thinks. A person may be very knowledgeable in some form of educative systems and may have gotten all of the respect from others and may have gone through this experience and realized it didn't really cause growth. Sometimes experience shows us what we don't want, and that's also good, because that helps to focus us towards what we really do want. Let's talk for a second about how knowledge can be a very valuable asset towards our growth. For example, we have been doing various forms of energetic manipulation throughout these years. We have also been discussing about our energetic being and coming to know ourselves much more. And this knowledge is giving us the capacity by which we can direct our evolution. This is conscious evolution. This conscious evolution is that by which we can, in and of our own desire, at our own will, we can expand our energy, our power, systematically and regularly. Now, this is fabulous. We have gone from the point of having evolution happen to us to being in control of our evolution. How we can consciously expand our spiritual muscle and do it in a way which is compatible to our needs right now. Therefore, this knowledge is extremely important, because this knowledge is directly connected with our evolutionary development when we consciously do it. And therefore, knowledge in that sense is extremely valuable. It is not something which just happens to us by the way. It is something that we are consciously cultivating. We are aware of our energy. We are aware of the limits of it. We are aware of the quality of it. We are aware of how that interacts, our energy interacts with the external world, with other people. We are aware of the effect of other persons' energies on us. We are aware of the effect of our own and others' energies on our physical bodies. We are aware of how our energy creates that which is around us. This kind of knowledge is that which expands our awareness. And consciousness is characterized by awareness. So as we experience, as we go through these different disciplines, these different activities, we expand our awareness. And this expanded consciousness is expanding our energy, because that consciousness is our energy, and it is developing its power. But when the consciousness is very mature, that power is used for good. Now, I know that the powers of quote-unquote evil use the same exact technique. And therefore, we are afraid of power. That we even say absolute power corrupts absolutely. There are even countries which are created on the basis of this. The socialistic systems are based upon that principle, to never allow the power to go out of the hands of some benefic government. Now, in reality, when we have that power, that power we use for good. We use it for the good of helping others, of connecting to others, of being there for others, of rendering service to others. And the difference is not that we say, we know what is better for you, you do it like this. We don't say that. We say, how can we be of best service to you? And we wish to render service according to our capacities to do so, without compromising what we are. And at the same time, keeping that connection, maintaining that connection, strengthening that connection to the Supreme. And using that flow of divine energy that is coming through us to expand that power throughout the whole world. I cannot personally do any kind of manifested activity that affects the whole world. It's just ridiculous. I can't even do things which affect my neighborhood that I live in. Not significantly. Yet, the nature of energy is such that if I just expand my loving spiritual energy, aware, conscious spiritual energy, it can flow throughout the whole world and somewhere, somehow be of some kind of use. I can be a conduit. I can be a vehicle by which the energy of the Supreme can benefit all. Ultimately, I cannot do more than that. Because even though I may try to do other very focused or very physically significant acts, even if they have a spiritual element to that, I can only do that in a very limited way. So I wanted to use this opportunity today to speak about that manifestation of power, that idea of power as being the growth, the real development, the nourishment, the cultivation of what we are, of what is real evolution. And when we focus on that, we can avoid all of the mistaken notions that anyone, anywhere, may try to throw upon us as to what is evolution. And we will no longer accept a means as an end. Others may give so many different things we should do, the means by which we shall attain something. But in reality, those means just somehow get us stuck. Unless we are understanding exactly what it is we're doing and why, with the understanding of the growth and expansion of our evolutionary, through the evolutionary process of our spiritual energy. So these mundane ideas of evolution, the mundane idea depends upon acquisitions. There wasn't this before, and now there is this now, so there is therefore a direct evolutionary step. My finger was straight before, it bends now, there was evolution. I didn't know anything before, now I have a degree, I have evolved. I was angry before, I'm not angry now, I have evolved. Okay, tolerance, mercy, compassion, these are manifestations of evolution. Where we have gone through experiences which have allowed us to grow to the point where our power will make us feel safe in regards to others. We are so powerful, we feel safe when another person is ignorant. We feel safe when another person does things which are foolish or harmful. We can tolerate other persons because we are strong in ourselves. We can be compassionate, merciful, and forgive because we are strong in ourselves. Have you ever, for example, been very stressed out, doing tons of things all the time, just working, and you're very tired inside, tired energetically, tired mentally, tired in all ways? And in such a state, any kind of extra stimulus, any kind of small disturbance, even if somebody just says something, we just freak out and crack up. Because we are so weak, having too much, too stressed, we lose our capacity to manifest any tolerance or any compassion or any capacity to react or interact with others for their sake, because we are so needy ourselves. So therefore, these good qualities that we glorify are byproducts of our strength. They are not necessarily something that you develop on their own. Rather, one expands the spiritual consciousness, expands the awareness, connects with the divine energy with strength. And then when the stimulus of a negativity comes, one will react towards it in a proper manner. Now, naturally, I'm talking about a very idyllic form of strength and growth and evolution and awareness. The real world experience of these things is a mixture of all kinds of stuff. Our bodies can be stressed with physical pain. Our physical environments can be total in chaos. These things seriously affect us, regardless of how transcendental we so-called are. However, the main point is that if we respect power as the natural growth of the spiritual energy, we can cultivate it powerfully. And this can help us enormously in our spiritual path. And don't forget, when you have that strength, you're not afraid of various experiences which will catapult your evolution. Catapult it, just springboard it to a... Anyway, I have tried my best in this discussion to make the point. Maybe I have overmade it. Maybe I've spoken too much about something which is obvious. But I am trying my best to bring up a point which will give us a possibility to expand our growth. I have this really very simple yet incredibly deep question. How does one know that one has power? What are the symptoms of power? Now, of course, you all know that how to get the power is what we've been talking about for the last so many years, and it's in all the lectures and all of the meditations. That you know. But how do you know when you've actually got power? Okay, that's a good question. Now, I know very well that somebody may say, well, this is obvious. It's obvious when you have power. Well, maybe, and maybe not. It depends on what kind of power you're talking about. And I know people who have power yet don't know they've got it. For example, if let's say you had a healing power, a healing capacity, but you never used it, how would you know you had it? What if you had a psychic capacity and you heard things, saw things, understood things, but never related it to the reality you were in? How would you know you were psychic and not crazy? There are certain powers which develop when one's spiritual energy is expanded. I gave two examples. For example, one can project energy. One learns the way to project energy and projects one power in such a way that you can heal diseases of others or you can balance the energy of others. This has to do with the transferal and feeling of energy. That's the power. So when you have that power, you can immediately feel what other people feel. You can immediately move through their energy and examine it. Now, how would you know you can do that unless you try? If you don't try, you don't know you can do it. That is why in the very beginning in St. Petersburg, we did these experiments with feeling energy between each other. It's something you have to cultivate, but the basic power to do it comes from having an expanded energetic field, a capacity, a strength. And just like in music or in art or in any kind of creative endeavor, you know what is right, you know what is wrong, you have the way to perceive whether this works or that works and the effect it will have on the audience because of your experience. You have learned, you have tried, you have practiced, you have experienced, and you know. And the only way you'll be able to do that with the energy of people is to practice it. You can't ask your friends to be laboratory test subjects. I don't mean to say that you should practice healing on others until you know what you're doing, but at least you can practice feeling how they are, feeling how they feel. You can feel energy. Like one of the things I do is I do healing on my dog and cat. And I'm never able to handle the way they react to it. It's just so fabulous. I pick up, like, for example, Suchi, and I say, okay, you're going to get a healing now. So he goes, okay. And then I put him on the bed, and I say, lay there. And he's a little nervous, but he lays there. And as soon as I put my hands there and the energy starts to flow, he just lays there. And then he rolls upside down with his legs in the air, and he's just completely saying, okay, great. Yesterday he had amoebas and parasites, I felt them. So I was shooting those parasites, you know, with some very heavy orange energy. And when I was really doing it heavily, he was moving like, ouch, ouch. And then he would look at me like, how do you do that? You're not touching me. How do you do that? It's like he's telling me. And then, you know, I filled him with all kinds of creamy energies. And the thing he loves the most is when I massage his energy. I like move it this way and that way. I'm not touching him. I'm just moving his energy like you would massage some dough that you're going to make into a bread. And he's like moving with it like he's really getting massaged. Now, nobody taught me that you massage energy fields like you massage dough. I just felt it. I tried it. And he didn't object, so he liked it. It's not like I've been doing this for quite some time. And he got better. So how do you know if you have a power? Well, it works. What you do works. You do something, it has an effect. You want to help somebody, you send them loving energy, or you send them supportive energy, or you do something for them, it has an effect. But you'll never know that you have something or don't have something until you try to use it. If you don't try, you never know. That's why I was in the beginning trying to help people understand how to use healing energy, trying to help people understand how to use psychic energy, because if you don't try, you never know that you've got. These different energetic things that we do expand our power, but your power, unless you use it, you lose it. It's something you have to cultivate continually, otherwise it atrophies. And that's not good. So, how do you know? The question was very simple. How do you know you have power? And the answer is very simple. Because of the results of what you do, that you manifest that power. And if you never manifest it, you never know. And if you manifest it and you get a little result, don't think, oh, I have no power. Cultivate it. The power is within, it just has to manifest, so it needs some cultivation. These are energetic muscles. The more you use them, the more they grow. I have another question. I really like this question. While we're on Earth, we expand consciousness. But we usually talk about after physical death that one becomes very clear, one becomes very aware. And, one second. So this would imply, in one sense, that what is the use of working with so much effort to expand our consciousness in this lifetime, if anyway it happens naturally after death? Now, that's a really cool question. I mean, after all, somebody's thinking that, well, if anyway in these in-between times I have everything that I'm looking for now, why should I look for it now? Well, there's two answers to that. One of them is totally obvious, and the other is a little less obvious. The totally obvious answer is that, well, I'm not living in the in-between time most of the time. Most of the time, or at least now anyway, I'm living in the now. And therefore, I have to act according to the now, not the then. After all, if somebody were to say, oh, now I'm suffering terribly from all kinds of physical pain, but what's the use of trying to resolve the pain? Because when I die, it'll be all gone anyway. So the obvious answer is, if I have a problem now, I have to deal with it now. I can't wait for some future. Obviously. But the less obvious answer is more interesting. The less obvious answer is that, well, it's the same consciousness, isn't it? It's the same me at the moment of death and just after the moment of death. So therefore, the expansion I do now is that expansion which manifests then. But in that state, I can't expand my consciousness. Therefore, I have to do it in this state. Because in this state, I've got all these challenges, this body, this mind, these elements, these people, this world, these challenges which push or stimulate my evolution. They stimulate my growth. And therefore, it's in this life that we have that great opportunity which will manifest later on. Too, also manifest later on. Therefore, it's essentially important to take care of that growth now. Now, here's a question which is also interesting. One professor has explained that some religious books which talk about philosophical concepts, spiritual philosophical concepts, and so on, are traps for intellectuals. Because if you just accept somebody else's conclusion of things, it's a trap where you are stuck. What one is supposed to do is come to one's own conclusions of things. And the question is, what is my impression of that? Okay, I understand that. It certainly makes sense, and naturally I would not object terribly to such a statement. But we do have to build on certain principles. That's why we talk so much every Saturday. Yes, we need to come to our own conclusions. However, we need help to do that sometimes. For example, if you just walk into some group of people who are totally unused to discussing spirituality, they're just simply basically concerned with day-to-day life, and you tell them, just try to reach your highest evolutionary goal. They'll look at you with a big blank. Now, there are people who are just moving towards their evolutionary goal and are very confident in the way they do it. They don't need to ask any questions or hear anything. They may do it, though, for the sake of their own development, their own expansion and growth, according to what they might feel exciting to them or a stimulus to them. They may ask questions. They may get involved in some process external to themselves. Now, there may be another group of people who actually are curious, actually inquisitive, actually would like some direction to help them find their way. And for them, there is a value. For them, there is a purpose in trying to understand in a deeper way the processes by which evolution can be advanced. So basically the way I have been presenting it is according to what has been asked in this question, is that here is this information, here are these methodologies, here is this way in which you can develop. This is what I've understood, this is what I can offer you. Take what you want, take what you can, take what you need, and run with it, or walk with it, or put it on the shelf, or do what you want. Ultimately, it is you who have to find your way to your own growth, because it is only you who can grow. So I see anything I may do as an assistance to you, as a help to you, as a reference body of material to you, to do what you need to do when you wish to do it. And from that point of view, I'm willing to do this. Sometimes people write to me and they say, tell me what to do. And I say, no way. You know, sometimes they offer me, still, I can't believe it, but it's still going on, tons of praise. You're great, you're this, you're that, you're this one, you're that one, whatever, and give me mercy. I say, forget it. Because what they are doing in essence is they are saying, I don't have anything, you have everything, give it to me. And this is quite opposite to what I'm really saying. So when people make such kind of comments, I understand they haven't been listening. I can only give what I've got, which is a limited amount of things, which I feel could be helpful to you, for you to take and then digest it as you wish, take it as food, digest it as you wish, and get strong the way you are. So my way of being of service is to assist, to nourish, and to provide a means or some part of the means by which you can become great. Now, in this sense, there are two last questions. If in the association with our relatives and friends, we forget about our experience and our power, now, does that hinder our spiritual growth? My answer is, it'll only hinder your spiritual growth if you continue to forget and you never remember. Sometimes when I'm in situations with relatives and so on, naturally, I feel just very forgetful. But then, when that's over, I can be myself again. It doesn't stop my spiritual growth. It's just during that particular series of interactions, not all of them, but when they happen, it just lets me be a little bit more thoughtful about myself. And usually what I do is I see their difficulties, I see their lives through their expressions, which are so fascinating in one sense, even when they are so-called mundane. I find it fascinating the way people choose to resolve their difficulties within the practical realm or the realm of this world, and how they express that with their frustrations or with their joys or with their needs. It's a fascinating thing. Because sometimes when you see the pain of others or the frustrations of others or even the pleasures of others, it gives you insight into your own. So it's not necessarily a taken for granted fact that if you are in such association, it has to hinder your spiritual growth. But it would be so if you simply think that your role in such interactions is to push away the interaction so that you don't forget your spiritual growth. Because in this process of resisting it and pushing it away, you lose the connection to the gift there may be there, that may be there. There might be a gift there. There might be a thing that can help you in this by seeing their pain, by understanding it deeply and understanding how it connects to you, or seeing their struggle or seeing their growth.